How are we doing? Welcome to Big Jim's Garage. Grab me a coffee.
Thanks.
All right. Coming up this episode, couple reviews. Some time with the RAV4 from Toyota, the redesigned one, and also spent some wheel time with the Lexus UX200. They kind of tie together with the whole CUV thing. We'll get into that discussion in a little bit. But I really want to talk about the Bullitt. The Bullitt Mustang is going up for auction. As we record this, it's going to happen on the 10th at Mecum in Kissimmee, Florida. No reserve. There's no reserve on this. Now, they're expecting like up to $10 million. And if you don't know the whole story, we're going to talk with Sean Kiernan in just a couple seconds. Actually, Sean came here in Detroit where we tape our garage podcast, came here with Ford and spent some time with him. Great guy. Great guy. And it is the Bullitt Mustang. Yeah, this one from the Chase. It's the greatest car chase ever. There are some amazing car chases. I mean, I know the Italian Job and yada, yada, yada. We can bounce around with those. But when it gets down to it, the Bullitt Mustang and the story behind it, if you don't know how they came to get it, his dad bought it from a want ad. Well, here's Sean telling the story. Your dad bought this car in a want ad, right, basically?
Yeah, it's a classified ad in the back of Road and Track magazine. Yeah, and just happened to be an awesome Friday afternoon. Dad pulled it out of the mailbox, and honestly, before my mom even got out of school, the car was sitting in the driveway.
So, but back then, though, I mean, so what year is this, 72, 73? What was the timing of that?
74, okay. October 74, yeah. And, yeah, it was listed as, you know, a 68 fastback Bullitt car, you know, Ken document. But it really, you know, in 74, movie cars weren't really a thing. Dad was more of a Shelby fan, more of a fastback Ford Mustang guy. So this being just a big block Ford Mustang, that's, I think, what enticed him to get it. But what enticed him to keep it was the fact that it is Bullitt.
So you've got so your dad's driving the car now. Mom and them is driving it too. So you guys had it. It was pretty much the daily driver for how long? 3, 4, 5 years?
Yeah. So from 74 to 80, my mom, dad, sister, rode in the car and basically put 46,000 miles on it. And absolutely drove it every day.
And killed the clutch probably, right?
Yeah. The clutch had already been hammered on, as you can tell, like through the movie and through the first owner and second owner, the clutch had been already hammered on pretty good. And I think they just kind of finished it off. And that's what eventually, you know, that's why she got parked. It, not only was I born in a 68 fastback wasn't practical anymore. It was more or less just, you know, she needed a little bit of work on her.
So at what point did Steve McQueen find out that your dad had this car?
So that was in December 77. Of course, throughout the end of 77 is when he reached out to the second owner, got all of my father's information, and then started calling my dad. And then that's when you see the letter. That was the kind of the final, hey, I'm going to ask one last time. And, you know, it was never about, hey, here's a ton of money. It was always, you know, hey, I'll replace it with a car that's kind of like it. And that's why that was, I think, an easy no for my dad. It's like, thanks, but no thanks. Because at that point, he'd already had the car for 3 years. And that was, you know, this is his baby.
I'm surprised with, you know, you think the emotional connection they had to that movie for a guy like McQueen, that money wasn't an issue. So for him to do that, I wouldn't say an insult, but it's kind of surprising that he didn't offer more money for that.
Yeah. And then, you know, I always thought the same thing. And then digging into it through actually a friend of mine, Ken, he had just gone through a divorce. So he was about 1 month out of divorcing his wife, which I think was Chad's mom. And so, you know, I kind of get it. You know, coming out of a divorce, he was wanting, you know, something that he had 10 years prior, didn't have a ton of money to pay up for it. So
makes,
I get it.
Okay, it does. It makes sense there. Sean Kiernan with us, the owner of the original Bullitt Mustang here with Ford on Woodward in the Motor City this weekend. So we fast forward. You guys have moved to Nashville. The family's in Nashville. The car's in a barn. Life happens. And like so many people listening to this right now, Sean, if there's one city that could totally relate to that, it's Detroit. If you think about how many cars are sitting in garages that are half done. I mean,
exactly.
With the best of intentions. When we built a car for charity a couple of years ago, we went out looking at bodies. We didn't have enough hours in the day to go look at all the bodies of these amazing cars that were just sitting there.
Oh, exactly. Every one of us car guys has that car on the back burner that we're getting to or going to get to. And when we have time, we work on it. And, you know, when we don't, we go. And that's, you know, life's going on. And, this ours just happened to be Bullet. And, you know, that's easy to talk to car guys, and they get it pretty fast. It's awesome, especially here in Detroit, because, yeah, like you said, every garage has got a gem in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's got a car that they either want to do or they want to have. For me, it's always been an International Scout Harvester. I've always wanted a Harvester. Oh. International Scout. I've wanted a Scout, and I want to put a Ford 289 in it. That's my dream car.
Oh, man, that'd be awesome. With a PTO on the back?
Exactly. Just, you
would
know.
Be amazing.
Exactly. Just a car that it's got some character to it. So now, at what point, you've got custody of the car. Your dad passed away when?
2014, so just over 4 years.
Okay, so when did you guys come to realize, I mean, obviously you knew that it was more than a car, but when it really became like, holy crap, we've got a car that's potentially worth millions of dollars that everybody wants?
I would say it's probably the late 90s, and right around 01, when Ford came out with their first commemorative car in 2001, that kind of shed a lot of light, and then that's when the internet started asking the question, where's the original car? That's when things kind of got weird. It was just the internet was providing quite a bit of where is it, how is it, where's it been, and for, you know, honestly, from 01 to 08 was constantly that going on just in the internet world.
Oh, we've done so many. I remember, like, you know, now that they found the second car in Mexico, supposedly. But even before that, we all talked about it. I mean, that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everybody talked about it.
I was the troll. I was the guy on every site that, you know, was kind of just trolling every website. And not saying anything, watching each one and looking at all the comments going, where is it at? And what's funny is people had a pretty good timeline of saying, you know, it was in Jersey, went to Kentucky, and it's in Middle Tennessee. And they had a roundabout idea. But, you know, thankfully for the handful of people that actually knew where it was or knew our name, kept quiet. And those are the people I appreciate the most.
So your buddy, when you were talking with him in the car, your co-manager, right, that you were in the car when he was describing his idea for a Bullet-type movie with two kids who find the bullet in a barn. You, mm-hmm. was that, I mean, I know I've read stuff and heard things, Sean, was it a point where you're like, all right, this is too weird, I got to tell him? Were you still anxious about telling him?
No, it was that moment that, you know, everybody has like that one defining moment. And I was in the truck that Dad had owned, and then I had bought from him. But this is what we took our road trips in. It was a Avalanche, and we always took a road trip in that. I had just been married the week before and went through an emotional roller coaster with that because my father wasn't there. And was definitely taking care of the farm and my mom, and the car is what I was reaching for and just wanted an answer. And I'm telling you, if ever there was a moment that my dad could have spoke to me, it was in there, but it was more or less him in the back seat smacking me in the back of the head going, this is the time. So
I'm a big believer. The only way to make God laugh is tell him your plans, Sean. That's it.
Exactly.
Yeah. You'd have never mapped this out in a million years the way this is going.
Not even close. Yeah. And I can just, you know, and now it's so funny because I can kind of see him and you know, just God up there with Dad and McQueen sitting back laughing, watching all this.
So you decide you're going to let Ford know that you've got the car. Did you make the call, and who did you call?
So Kevin Marty, who I got involved very quick, because my number one thing was, you know, I didn't want to unveil the car to the world and then somebody say that's not real or that's fake. Because with this being the most personal thing on the planet to me, the last thing I want somebody to do is say that's not real. So I kind of worked backwards. So the first person I called was Kevin Marty, and he's the absolute Mustang authenticator on the planet. Through him, that's how I actually got with Mikhail Haggerty and then Mark Gessler and then Mike Berardi. And Mike Berardi, in the Ford world at the time, was the director of service, the executive director of service, and also a Mustang connoisseur to the fact where he has so many Mustangs. I think on the day that there was 10 million Mustangs, four of those was his. and he's the one that set up the meeting with the Mustang team. And that was the process it went through. So probably started in April of 16, and then the meeting was in November.
Now, once they realized what you had, and I've seen the way, and I'm not just saying this because we're working with Ford this weekend, they treat you with so much respect. I saw it at the auto show, and kid gloves, that it's really cool to see how it plays out that way, Sean.
Yeah, and it's because, you know, I do throw everybody a curve because I trailer the car. I take care of it. I drive it. I touch it. I clean it. Nobody else touches it, and that's usually different. Usually everybody else is, you know, we'll take care of your car and we'll fly you anywhere, but I'm different because I trailer it everywhere. I clean it. I touch it. So, yeah, it's amazing because you know you work with car guys when they know what you're feeling, and that's – when it comes down to it, it's easy for me to be one of the family of Ford, not only because my wife and her whole family work for Ford, or my wife's family work for Ford, but it was so easy to become part of the Ford family.
So after you have no regrets, obviously. I can't hear any even the twinge of regret in this. Do you regret maybe not telling people sooner?
Oh, no. There was an absolute perfect timing moment, and I think we hit it on the nose. The car was 50 years and 4 days old when I unveiled on January 14th, and it was the 50th anniversary and the new Bullet going with it. And yeah, there were just so many things that just ended up being exactly perfect that, no, it wasn't in my hands for most of the time. So yeah, I didn't question anything. I just kept it in between the ditches.
So, how often before you actually told the world about this, how often did you watch the movie Bullet? You had to have owned it, right? I mean, you had it on VHS or DVD. How often did you sit down and watch the movie going, I got that car, that's mine?
The movie itself,
yeah.
Not a ton. The 10 minutes and 53 seconds in the center, quite a bit.
you're probably used to like 2 million of the YouTube hits are from you.
And I love the movie, but it's a definite, hey, I'm going to watch it tonight, versus the chase scene. If you're sitting there, sometimes you just want to grab it and watch it. It's an easy, quick 10 minutes.
There you go. Conversation with Sean Kiernan, the guy who owns the Bullet Mustang. Well, for the time being, at least, as we record this, we're a couple days away from Sean putting this thing up for auction at Mecum down in Florida. $10 million is what they're expecting. It always makes you think, though, if you could have one car, I know it's generic conversation, but it's fun to think about when you're driving. If you could have one car from a movie, what would it be? Or TV show. General Lee comes up, the A-Team van, the Bullet Mustang, obviously. I mean, one of the Smokey and the Bandit. Didn't one of the Burt Reynolds Transams went up for sale. Okay, crazy in that one. But you always start thinking about which of those cars. Any cars in the... I always wanted Vin Diesel's car. What was that? The Charger in Fast and the Furious with the giant motor. That would always be fun. Anyway, I'm real curious to see what the amount's going to be on this one, what they're finally going to hit on this. Okay, moving on from the Bullet to a couple car reviews I want to mention real quick because they kind of work together. When we talk about SUVs, sport utility vehicles, and then we get into CUVs, compact utility vehicles, I had a chance to get some seat time and drive two different ones with two different perspectives. The first one was the newly redesigned RAV4 from our friends at Toyota. Now, I get the Limited to the all-wheel drive. Sticker was just under 39. That's everything, right? I mean, this thing's loaded. Brand new design. And if you don't know me, I'm 6'5", and I have a 29-inch inseam. The reason I mention that is I'm all upper body, and some cars are just suck to get into. I bang my head when I dive in there. The RAV used to be like the tallest one. It just had, for a small car, it had great headroom. The new one, it looks great. They definitely lowered the roof line, though. Ducking into it, got used to it. And I'll be honest, I was kind of grumpy about it for 2 or 3 days. I really wasn't too into this whole RAV4. Driving around in it, it's all right. Getting good mileage. I'd say I'd average on the freeway about 30, 32, maybe 28 combined. Good mileage. Nice car. Everything was just kind of meh. And then it snowed. Snowed here in the Motor City, and I had a day to drive that thing in the snow. Dude, that is one of the best all-wheel drive systems that I've had in a long time. Torque vectoring all-wheel drive. You notice it right away. You get a 2.5 liter dual overhead cam four cylinder, the dual, the WTI in it. So you're getting a little over 200 horsepower, 184 pound foot of torque. But when it snows and when you drive this car on all wheel conditions, it handles as well as anything I've driven for twice the price or three times the size. That's where it makes it mark. Truly, the RAV4 is an all-season vehicle. I sound like I'm writing a review right there. Dot, dot, dot. Truly, the RAV4 is an all-season vehicle. But it is. It really is. And you notice it right away. So the Toyota people, the redesign, yeah, I'd like more headroom because I'm a gorilla. But other than that, there's one note. The Entune system, Toyota, give it up. Stop it. Everybody's using either Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. I don't want another system on my phone. I don't want another app on my phone. Get rid of it. It doesn't work. It doesn't work, and I won't use it. So I wound up not using a lot of the little bells and whistles tied in with that one. So speakers sounded great. The rest of it, meh. You know, that at least as far as that technology. Don't put another app on my phone. I don't need it. And I'm not being a grumpy old man. Just being honest here. But the RAV4, again, for an all-season vehicle, very, very, very impressive. All right, next one. 2019 Lexus UX200 F Sport. Have you seen these? The little tiny Lexuses. My wife walks out and she goes, oh, it's a baby Lexus. I'm like, yes, it is. Right around 41,000. All the bells and whistles. It's really wild when you get inside this car because you're looking around, a CUV, excuse me. And I'm looking around. I swear to God, like they were motivated to put every single feature that is in a full size in this small one. So you've got like two rows of buttons and a CD player, and you've got the dash display, and you've got an analog clock, and you've got the pad down in the middle. It's a lot. But once you get used to it, it's fine. So you're looking around, you're like, yeah, it's nice. Then you get it on the road. Wow. So much fun to drive. The front-wheel drive system, the F-Sport package. The F-Sport package in this is as good as anything Lexus makes. It just is so much fun to drive. You get about 186 horsepower. It doesn't matter. You're getting 37 on the freeway in this thing, and it's really comfortable. Now, let's be honest. It's a two-seater. You can put kids in the back. It's got two rows, but I don't know what the second row of seating is for. I mean, it's small. Again, for me, being a big fat gorilla, when I push it back. But if it's a day car, if it's a city car, if it's you and a friend and maybe one other person, boom, you're going to love it, man. And I can't get over the ride. Our roads in Michigan, I've joked about this, are pretty much a lunar landscape. They suck. They suck. And we know this. So sometimes when you're driving cars, they tend to load up on the road. They hit all these potholes, and they just keep loading up and loading up and loading up, and they become so stiff that your head's banging off the ceiling. This car is, honestly, I went in some dirt just to see what it had handled, because on the road with the potholes, it was fine. And even with the low-profile tires, which you would think would have more of an impact. They do not. Fantastic ride. I can't say enough about this little car. I really, really, really enjoyed the Lexus, the UX200 F-Sport. Again, check that out. It's 2019 version. All right. We're going to wrap it up for the show. It's that time of year, man. Racing's coming back. We're about, what, a month away from Daytona? Penske finished his purchase of Indy. You got IMSA and all the Daytona races right around the corner. Yeah, baby. All right. You guys be good. Thanks to the Daves for this song. Thanks to Sean Kiernan for that great story about the Bullet Mustang. You guys be well. Something you want to hear, email me, bigjim@wcsx.com. Or follow me on Twitter @WCSXJim. All right, guys. Who is it?
Old people in cars.
Hey!
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.